Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm here today with Jury Love. Jury, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Travis? Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Hey, I'm doing great. Pleasure to have you. You've got quite the story, which led you from Japan to America and into college, starting your own nonprofit organization called Genuine Voices. And now you're hosting a cable access show called Foxborough Cable Access. That's around quite
Fox. Yes.
Around Foxborough. Yes. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jury.
Well, first of all, Travis, thank you for having me on your show. And I'm very excited to be sharing my story. My name is Jury Love, J-U-R-I-L-O-V. And I'm from Japan, as you mentioned. And I came to Berklee College of Music in 1998. And I'm going to touch upon my past a little bit later. But as this is for the nonprofit, I started a nonprofit called Genuine Voices. And I ran it as a founder and a president for 12 years. And I received an award from Boston Celtics called Heroes Among Us and a volunteerism award from New England Patriots because our work was very unique. We were teaching music to juvenile offenders, especially hip hop and production. And these are the population that are very hard to get to. So they recognized our work.
Yeah, it's very interesting that something like music can give them the form of expression they need to really find out who they are and actually express themselves. So it's great that you were able to start that and help so many people in your time with the Boys and Girls Clubs and even when you got into detention centers. It's really cool. What would you like to share with us today, Jury?
I would like to share about the nonprofit, the process of how you want to really manifest your idea when you want to start a nonprofit. And I've had asked that questions quite a few times from several people who actually started a nonprofit or about to start a nonprofit. So first of all, when I'm asked a question, oh, I want to start a nonprofit, I ask the same question when I started a nonprofit. So my story is that I am a survivor of child sex abuse from my father, which I wrote on my book called A Gift from Adversity, and survivor of, yes, thank you so much. Yeah, this book actually became Amazon number one new release last year. Very proud. So I focus on how I overcame trauma in the process of, you know, dealing with PTSD, panic attack, suicidal attempt, hardship, and, you know, domestic violence, bullying, and homelessness. And then along the way that I discovered a lot of like resilience, strengths, and the people who had helped me. So my story of starting Genuine Voices is really coming from how I can help to basically prevent this maybe crime, you know, perpetrators that are especially men, then if I can maybe intervene some of these behaviors early on, then maybe I can help to decrease the amount of victim, because there's a research showing that each perpetrator carries 6 victims. If you focus on victims, it's really hard chance to get rid of them. But if you focus on perpetrator, and then it's just concept that it's, you know, penetrated in your head that I wanted to focus on. And then when 2001, 9/11 happened, it was senior year at Berklee College of Music, where I had to do some senior project. A lot of people, a lot of students at Berklee College of Music did recording or concert, but I wanted to do the community service. And I read this book about a guy who taught journalism in a detention program in LA, and then some became a screenwriter. And then I got really inspired by that story. It was like a short paragraph in Japanese book. I even forgot the title about it, but I just remember that phrase. And it was like a thunderbolt. And then I had kind of an epiphany moment that I want to help these kids who are locked up and then who can maybe use music as an escape, which I was using my music piano as an escape to keep my sanity while this abuse was going on. So I thought that would really help kids, but I just didn't know how. So then 9/11 happened. And then I think at that time, a lot of people, the whole country especially, felt really compelled to do something impactful and then help other people. So I went to Korea Development Center at Berklee College of Music. And then Peter Spellman, the director then, when I told my idea, I want to help kids in a detention program with music. And then he said, that sounds like nonprofit. And I'm like, what is nonprofit? And that's how much I didn't know anything about nonprofit. So he connected with me with an organization called Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, where all the attorneys who had extra time volunteer. So I was connected to one of the attorney to file article of the organization. And that's when I was able to obtain the tax ID from the state of Massachusetts. But then you have to get IRS status of 501c3. And that took me a while. But finally, I found an accountant who had helped me to file the 501c3. So that's how I started. I had no idea. And the next step, obviously, not just the legal part of it, but to find the location. And my story was kind of interesting because I Googled kids in jail. And then this probation officer, Bill Stewart, came up. And then Bill has been advocate and then working with troubled youth a lot in Boston area, especially in Dorchester, which is like high crime area, sometimes low income. And then he works at Dorchester District Court. He was working at Dorchester District Court at that time. And then I called him, and then he was doing the youth prevention program during the summer, especially when kids are hanging out, really like talking to them, approaching them, and then trying to, you know, give them a job opportunities, and then really working ground level. So I went to talk to him, and then he was very generous of me coming to talk to him. And I said, "Officer, I really want to teach music in a detention program." And he said, "Jury, you're Japanese. You don't know anything about gang. You really want to educate yourself, but not jumping yourself into the detention program. But start with at-risk youth, where there is high crime area, where you can be intervention for the kids to not go to jail." So he referred me to three different locations. So we identified one, which was the Boys and Girls Club. And then we started a program there. It was in 2001. So now 20 years later today, 2021, that program is still going and strong. And I was just talking to my acting class last night. So basically 2009, around that time, an investor came in and he donated 100 grand to the program. So they knocked down the wall. We thought it was like one closet space, one computer donated, speaker, keyboard, four volunteers and six students. Now the entire, like half the floor of the Boys and Girls Club is dedicated to music program. They knocked down the wall. They built like 60K, like recording studio and the music equipment, and then funded the musical director position. So I was recognized when they opened the studio for initiating the program. And not only that, I was actually featured on Japanese TV show a couple of years ago when they followed me out, visited Boys and Girls Club. That show actually got viewed by 7.5 million people in Japan. And when I went to the Boys and Girls Club, I just started to cry because I heard so much music. And then a boy who was playing drum set in a drum practice room told me since he was child, like 3, 4, like, you know, he just started to visit the music program. And now he went to Boston Arts Academy, which is one of the top, you know, art school, amazing drummer. But he was there because his father got shot to death. And I think a day after he was there, the day after his death, it was just like a freak accident. Some gunfire came and then he died, but then he used the drums as a healing and an oasis, and he I told him in 2001, I started this program, and he really, really thanked me. And ever since, we've been in touch, and he's just such a great kid. But I, you know, when you start a nonprofit, when you start a program like this, you just never know the impact that you would make 10, 15, 20 years later or 30 years later. And especially this boy, at that time, he was 16 years old. Since he was 3 or so, that he's been using that program for basically entire his life. And then he's like, you know, he said, if not this program, I don't know where I would be. And those are the testimonials. But go back to where I started, how I started the nonprofit, was really asking ton of questions. And then, you know, going to people who have done a nonprofit. And then I went to so many meetings, and I was 26 years old when I started my nonprofit. So when I went to the meeting, I was so a little bit younger side of it for starting the nonprofit, but everyone was so generous with their knowledges. And then like, oh, Julie, you should meet this person, you should contact this person. And then not only creating the status of the 501c3 or getting the tax ID, developing the mission statement, branding, marketing, all that stuff, I had no idea. But along the way of 12 years, I gained tangible knowledges, and then something that I applied every single day, and I know what worked and what didn't work. So I'm very excited to share any of the experience that I had.
That's great. I love that you gave the whole overview of where you started, where you can, and how hard it was to actually start this thing. And so many people just want to get in for the program side of the nonprofit work and realize that they don't understand how to do the admin stuff and how to do the fundraising. But you kept your focus on the kids and the impact that you were making. And it's so easy in nonprofit work to get bogged down by all the things that need to be done in order to run the program, let alone just, you know, delivering the services that you want to do, the whole reason we start nonprofits. How did you keep your spirits up and your spirits high as you're working through all of these challenges?
Well, I think the concept that I explained to you about, you know, kind of selfish reason of how I want to prevent these crimes and then, you know, minimize the victims by changing one person at a time. I think that is the core value that I had kept despite all this craziness of admin side of it, as you mentioned. But, you know, you also write about, like, you know, how the nonprofit can get lost in the middle of so many people getting involved, board member, community partners, foundation, you know, volunteers. I swear, I think I hired over 200-300 volunteers or interns, and then we had so many community partners, obviously grant writing, fundraiser, all that stuff. You are absolutely right. Sometimes it can be involved some of the weird drama that's absolutely unnecessary. It's really nothing to do with the mission statement, but some people are kind of greedy or different agenda that, you know, can, like, you know, really attack you and your mission. So I've had that kind of conflict, and then I learned how to do a conflict resolution along the way as well. So I completely agree with you. But to answer, it's really personal reason in a way that I'm a victim of child sex abuse and then DV, that, you know, and then the adversity in a way, like my book, A Gift from Adversity, how did I overcome adversity, you know, really applies to really facing it, but at the same time, helping this youth for the 12 years and then listening to their stories and their adversities really helped me heal. So I would say more than I helped them, they helped me as well. And it was when I was taking a counseling for 6 years for my PTSD, I was telling a lot to my counselor about what's going on in the program and then how I interacted with some of the kids in the detention program. She was really proud of me. And she said, Julie, it's called corrective experience, and that's one of the best medicine you can take. So it's not invasive. It's not chemical, obviously, but corrective experience is really how you see the change that you didn't have and you wanted to see, you know, in the past. So you have a power right now in the present moment or future that you can do the corrective experience. Now, I have tangible example that one time we were teaching music in a detention program, and then some of the kids started to argue over something. And then usually when men start to have conflict, you know, argument, I get scared because I was really heavily physically abused when I spoke my mind. So it's really scary for me to speak my mind, especially confrontational situations. Now, this time I put my courage together and then told the boy, you have to stop. You know, you're being rude. You have to apologize. Set the boundary. And then it worked and it was fine. And then when I told my counselor, it was just like, really a big achievement to her. She was like really happy, jumping up and down. So it's a long answer. But as a founder of nonprofit, everybody has vision and mission, and everybody has drive. And then people don't understand as a founder and a president, or as you know, along the way of doing the nonprofit work, like you said, admin, or business and branding, all this, you know, work that's unrelated to exactly first, like the point that, oh, I just want to help kids in the detention program, you know, it's like a pure thought, right? Like, you know, just like the brainchild. But then along the way, when you're raising this brainchild, so many things come, just like you're raising your own child, right? So many community gets involved. So, but it's so important as a founder of the nonprofit that you stay focused on why you are doing this, and then who you want to help, and just stay focused on your mission.
It's important. Set the boundary. It was something I caught in that word there, that you had a hard time when there was male conflict around, but you did what you had to do as a leader to set and enforce the boundary. I think too many times in the nonprofit world, we forget the power that we have within us to control what goes on in our world. And really, it comes down to the power of choice of what you can and can't do. Most of the time, even regardless, you know, of your background or my background, people forget that they have the choice of how they're going to move forward. They might not have had the choice of the circumstance or how someone treats them, but you have the choice to move forward with healing, with growing, with being a nice person, or whatever that means to you. And we need to empower as many people, I think, as we can, to make their own choices for the future that they want to build, how they're going to envision it, how to manifest their own dreams and move forward. So you said that this Boys and Girls Club is still running your programs, even though I know you shut down your nonprofit, Genuine Voices, and it's no longer a nonprofit. They kept the equipment. I mean, what does it look like to shut down a nonprofit? What does that process look like for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's the question that people don't ask, because when you start a nonprofit, people get very excited. Nobody tells you how to stop. So, you know, and then it's an option to stop when there is a hard time that's occurred. So to answer your question in a short way, you have to file just like when you incorporate your nonprofit through the state that you've formed. So the state has this disclosure of disclosing of nonprofit. So you have to have board member witness, and you have to write these reasons why you are closing the nonprofit. In the state of Massachusetts, you have to go to court twice. So the first time you appeal with the paperwork, and then they schedule the court date. And then the judge would ask you to publicize the hearing date the judge will give you. And then if there's no objection after the publication on the hearing date, the last hearing date at Supreme Court, then you can close the nonprofit. So, and then you should not have no asset in your bank account. You have to close the bank account and then show the judge you have no balance. And then if there is any balance, you have to donate to other maybe nonprofit or benefactor, somebody who can benefit from the work that you have done. Now, the article they had to put on newspaper, it's very costly to put an ads on the statement on the legal notice section on the newspaper. It's like power word. So when I wrote it, I got like a quotation of $300. I'm like, no, I can't do that. So I wrote like really, really short. Junior Voice is closing this day. Like, no, the hearing is this day at this. So that's it. And then you have to bring the publication to the judge that you publicized. And then the judge will ask, is any objection? And if there's none. I remember having my newborn baby in front of me, and I had TV crew waiting for me that court day to go. And then that's how I closed my nonprofit.
Sounds like quite the ordeal. That's good, though. I think they make you, you know, publicly declare that you're shutting down and that time is coming to a close, and it kind of gives you closure. It's much different than a nonprofit that is just losing support in the community, and they've lost backing, and they've maybe changed their job title, or they're looking for new job opportunities, and there's just no one left to do the work. So a little bit different scenario, but I like that you go through the process. You even had, was it your daughter at the time? Yeah, your daughter at the time with you at the court day. So those of you listening right now, and you're looking at closing a nonprofit, sorry that you got to that point, or maybe it was a long, successful run and it's time for something new. Make sure you check with your state to find out your rules needed in order to officially close your nonprofit. Do it the right way so there's no IRS questions and all of that fun stuff. But Jerry, thank you so much for sharing that. So what does your life look like now after you've published the book, become a number one new publication on Amazon, you've healed from your trauma, and you've closed down your nonprofit. What does life look like for you now?
So after closing the nonprofit and then going through my identity crisis, I became a journalist right after, because I got offered a job as a journalist out of blue. I've never had a training as a journalist. So it was really crazy story, which I wrote the details on my book, A Gift from Adversity. And then I do modeling, acting, which I have been doing it along the way. I'm a musician, I'm a single mom, and I do podcasts, I do TV shows, sometimes film producing. I do Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, whatever it takes to pay bills. And then I'm aggressive investor in trading stocks, and I do crypto, and then I'm doing some real estate investment as well. So I'm learning a lot about investment as well. So I do a lot of different things.
It sounds like you're pretty busy. You've got all these different ventures. Have you heard of the law of the rabbit?
No. What's that?
The basis of the law is that if you chase two rabbits, that you catch neither.
Oh, okay.
So I wonder if you're a diverse lifestyle right now is preventing you from actually being super successful in one venture.
You know what? I have to kind of disagree with it, Travis. And I'll tell you why. And then that really comes from the experience of running nonprofit. And I'll tell you why. So when I was in a nonprofit, I had so many projects going on. I had maybe at one point 4 detention centers in the greater Boston area, having 2 to 3 sometimes lessons per week. All the volunteers showed up. I created a grade system that where, you know, Corey training, the detention center had a word system for behavioral participating music where they can get some reward as a community pass and stuff. So I had created this grade system in different detention program, and then I had grant writing, I had fundraising event, and then I had internship programs, and then at some point I had a wonderful program with Princeton University, or I had a program where I collaborated with the scholars from University of Australia, South Australia, which led to some published paper, like research work in regards to the juvenile detention program, and using the music as a platform to prevent the youth violence. And I was in a conference in Rome, Italy, and I was like going so many directions, and then doing like maybe, I remember one day I had 14 different appointments in one day, including my modeling job, like, you know, auditions and stuff. My argument with you about the rabbit is that as long as you, okay, think about farmer, they have so much crops that they plant in different time of the seasons. And then each crop will harvest in different timings. So doing nonprofit work, it's not overnight. Each project, each detention program, for instance, my case, have different rules and different administrator, different red tapes that you have to go through.
Yeah, but you are making my point, because all of this stuff is with their one vision of your nonprofit. That's all in one direction. That's all one program. But if you're talking about being a journalist and getting into real estate and investing and doing crypto and driving Uber and Lyft, those are different directions. That's not under one focus or one house.
Ooh, I have a focus though, Travis.
Oh, okay. What is your current focus?
The current focus really truly is to be the best mother, best single mom ever. And then just to have a roof above us, really. And then have sustainable life and happy life. And that's hard. It's so hard.
It's super hard.
Yeah. And then I have several single mom friends. And then this is like one of the hardest things I've done, being a single mom suddenly. And, you know, I've never expected to be a single mom at age 44, obviously. And I have 100% custody. It's just hard.
It's definitely hard. I grew up as the child of a single parent, and that's super tough. And, you know, she also suffered from bipolar disorder. So there was a lot of time where, even though she was a single mom, she couldn't take care of us. So we spent a lot of time in living with other family members and in foster care. So I definitely understand how hard it is living in a family where it's just a single parent trying to do it all. I definitely commend you for that.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's my focus. So whatever it takes. And then, but at the same time, I do have passion. I do have drive. And then I do have dreams that, you know, along the way, that whatever it takes. And then I feel at this point in my life, not just the nonprofit work that I dedicated 12 years of my life, and then had some recognitions, and then the respect that I earned from the community, but I gained massive knowledge of connecting people. I learned massive knowledge of branding, marketing, and those are the things that I apply. And also right now, my focus is really to help other people. So I was on Clubhouse. I was in Phoenix as a guest speaker, and then I was there for two nights. And then after the first night, I was on the Clubhouse, like four people who wanted to start nonprofit until 3-4 in the morning, because we just got into really deep discussion of how you create a nonprofit, how do you do it, and then what you want to do, and then the name, like, you know, how do you identify the name? You know, those are the things that I'm passionate about. And I told them, I was helped by so many people when I asked questions along the way, that people gave me massive knowledge I applied. So I want to give back to whoever needs my knowledge, because that's how I went from A to Z. And, you know, exactly like, you know, the generosity of people. But at the same time, though, Travis, you as a founder or leader of the nonprofit, you need to ask right questions, good questions. Without good questions, there's no good answers. And that actually helped me to become a great journalist. Because as a journalist, honestly, or a TV show host, you have to listen, and obviously, like, you have to ask good questions to get good answers, juicy answers. Like, you know, how do you build rapport with people? How do you make elevator pitch? Those are the things that I learned so much from doing the nonprofit work, which I'm actually applying every day.
I see too many people in the nonprofit space. They're in do mode. There's no time for planning. There's no time for questions. They're just doing. And I think that is just the wrong approach. Yes, stuff needs to get done, but you yourself don't need to do everything. You were speaking, Jury, about 200 to 300 volunteers and people that you brought in to help you. Where did you find all these volunteers?
Community, colleges, high schools. Some of the high school have community hours that they have to fulfill before graduation. Those are really good. So if you're a local nonprofit and have a relationship with the local high school, go to the community department where they have to do the community service and put out, you know, words for maybe social media intern and different things. Now, college students, they have internships. Internships are the best for the nonprofit legworks. So now it's a win-win. Now, my case, just an example, my case, I went to Berklee College of Music where they had a music therapy department. So a lot of music therapy major students wanted to volunteer regardless of internship status because they just wanted to experience and they just wanted to apply what they learned in a classroom in a real setting. I had two particular volunteers who are now professional music therapists, but at the time, from the freshman year of Berklee College of Music, they dedicated 4 years of college life volunteering for Genuine Voices every week, Hannah and Oliver. And then they became program director and then they were training people towards the end. So college students network, music therapy department, or depending on like, you know, your activity as a nonprofit, what is your nonprofit? But like, you know, say if your nonprofit is to teach dance, you know, go to, you know, some art school, or like musical theater, you know, oriented, or, you know, business, anything that aligns. So go to college, maybe internship advisors. And some of the colleges require internships to graduate. So I had four very, very good example. There's a college in New Hampshire called Franklin Pierce University. And then their summer intern hours is 120 hours. And then this student applied as a social media intern and he had to fulfill 120 hours. So I gave him access to our website, blog site, and Facebook site, Twitter. So he did all of that. He did all of the social media. So we sent update and then he sent, like, you know, he posts everything or write blog or interview people. So, and then I had, some of the local colleges are word of mouth, and then some professors that I have met at the conference heard about the work of Genuine Voices, recommended to their students. So like personal relationships and stuff. Another thing I wanted to mention, Travis, is internships.com. Internships.com is an amazing website. This is not only for nonprofit, but also the for-profit as well, that you can create an account for free of charge, internships.com. This was one of the best advice my friend Karen Weber gave me, because Karen runs Boston Green Fest, which like 100,000 people attend every summer for the past 10 years. So she had a ton of interns from the internships.com. Now, when you go to internships.com, you can create an account for free and then you can select, say, unpaid, remote. I had grant writer interns, social media interns, marketing interns, teacher position intern who actually flew from Washington State to Massachusetts or Iowa for the summer duration of the semester because some of the college endorses this interns program and they got $3,000 grant for living and then traveling cost to cover. So I had actually two interns out of state teaching music at the detention program 4 days a week, and they taught so many kids in the program and then they got so much out of it as well. So internships.com is gold doing the nonprofit, and it's very easy to navigate. They have templates. So if you put social media intern, they have a template. You just have to change the information of your organization. And then idealist.org is another website that I treasured. Idealist.org has all the nonprofit jobs, but you can create an account and post internships opportunity there as well. Another thing people need to know is there are types of interns that basically, one, you need a credit. You need to fulfill credit. So as a supervisor, you have to grade them at the end of the semester. So I gave A to all the students that worked for us. They did a great job. And another type is they already graduated. They don't need the credit per se, but they want to build their resume and they want to have an actual experience right after the college. But there's another tier of people who are adults and then who have nothing to do with college, but they just want to gain experience in the nonprofit world. I had one pilot, commercial pilot, who flies 1 week and who has 1 week off. And then he wanted to learn about grant writing. So he actually applied it from idealist.org, which I posted for grant writer position. And then he brought us total of $15,000 from his volunteer work. It was amazing. So those are the types of interns and volunteers. Another really good one is student like work study. So at Berklee College of Music, where I went, I worked heavily with Community Government Affairs Office, where they suggested that I tap into federal government money for work study program outside of off-campus work study program. This is gold. When you can negotiate with work study program, that's how I sustained the Boys and Girls Club program. And as of today, they are still sending students through the work study program. And the work study program, how it works is you have to have two status. You have to be US citizen. You have to have financial aid. If you have meet those two, you can do work study. And there's on-campus work study and off-campus work study. And that's how I built the workforce to send the students to the Boys and Girls Club when I started, knowing that it should sustain like at least 10 years, but now it's 20 years. So see how the impact can be made. And then when you are reeling these people in, you always want to think about systematic change and you always want to think 5 to 10 years goal and how can we sustain our workforce, our volunteers. So the work study program was a perfect example because 20 years later, that idea of having to tap into this federal government money and having the status of off-campus work study, which is ongoing program, that's gold.
To sum it up here, we got internships from internship.com, idealist.org, volunteer match, and created a work study program. That's so cool.
Yes, absolutely. But what I'm sharing with you today is something that I tried and it worked. And that's the difference between buying a book or maybe like, you know, searching on internet, how do you find a volunteer? I did it and I had track record and had success stories using these resources. So that's why I'm really honored to be here and then share what worked and what didn't work.
Oh, absolutely. I know as being a founder, you've got so many things tugging at you trying to get, you know, more funding and more money and more volunteers and more people and more programs and more collaborations. So it's always more, right? So it's nice to see someone that's actually taken that on board and found a way to get someone else to help them with their vision, with their mission. They're not trying to do it all on their own because there's no way you can have that kind of impact as a single person. You have to build the team around you. You have to get the systems in place, the programs in place that are going to run this thing when you're gone, because it's not about you at the end of the day. It's about the impact that you're making, the people's lives that you're changing. You know, there's not an organization out there called Travis Johnson's dang old organization about himself. There, that doesn't exist. There's no organization out there called Jury Love. There was an organization called Genuine Voices, and that music therapy program is still running at the Boys and Girls Club because of the work study programs and the systems that were put in place. So even though the nonprofit entity is gone, the work still continues.
Correct. And then one thing you mentioned about you cannot do it alone, that's so true. And I mentioned it in my book as well. So, you know, the SWOT program, you know, that I did, strengths, weakness, and then threats and stuff. Now, I went to Boston University School of Management, BU School of Management, and it was a business school hosted for this institute, nonprofit for leadership and management program. I did 6 months course there and I learned so much. First day that they let us do was the SWOT analysis where you find a weakness. And then I knew my weakness is English. And then English is not my first language. So when you are doing the grant writing or newsletter to your supporter, that's not my forte. And then, you know, obviously, like, you know, I want to try, I want to do things, but at some point you have to understand your limitations. So my specific example is English. When I'm writing a grant, I cannot compete with people who grew up with the language. So this is competitive. Grant writing is serious. I think the research is 1 in 10 chances that you get grant. So you apply a lot and you get, like, you know, a few chances to receive a grant. So that means you have to have, like, really professional, great writer. So the pilot volunteer, Michael, he was great, and his English was just excellent. And, you know, I think I dedicated my job, my task to people who are professional at, you know, some tasks such as grant writing or newsletter. Obviously, teaching part of it, I'm by myself, so I can't multiply myself. And, you know, again, I told, I mentioned earlier, I had 4 detention programs. Actually, we started some program in Washington State as well, a little bit. And then, you know, those volunteers, they did all the work. So kudos to them. And then their dedication, you know, they're unpaid. They took train in the cold weather, get picked up from the staff from the detention program, and then drove all the way through. And, you know, finding weakness as a leader of nonprofit or a leader of any company, I think it's important to admit that you can't do everything. But not only that, what is your weakness? What is your strength? And then how can you feel your weakness with somebody who's really good at it? So identifying forte from your volunteers or your board members or community partners to feel what you need within the organization is really important.
Yeah, I've talked many times in the show about zone of genius and what my zone of genius is. I know that I'm not the behind the scenes tech guy. I have people for that. I've got a team that's what they do. That's what they love to do. They get in it. They get it right. And I'm the guy that's the voice. I come out here and I say the wonderful things, and I have conversations with great guests like Jerry and have just a fantastic time doing it. There's nothing more than I love talking to people, meeting new people, learning about what their passion is, and then getting an opportunity to share that is just something that brightens my day each and every day. So, you know, I wouldn't quit this to go work in a behind the scenes job that is going to pay the bills. That is not my zone of genius, because that's not going to light me up. That's not going to keep me going. And that's not where my skills lie. So why would I go do that? No, I can't do that. I've got to get people for that, because they're going to do a much better job than I ever will. No matter how good I get at it, they're going to do a better job because that's what they're good at. So I have to give them the opportunity to use their zone of genius to help move my mission forward. I read through your book, and it's a fantastic story. And you are so open and so honest and vulnerable, sharing all your experiences. Definitely thank you for doing that, because those are the kind of stories that really help people understand what they're going through and how they can move forward. And there was an organization that you mentioned in your book called RAINN. It's RAINN, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. You can check out their things if you're struggling at RAINN.org, or dial their hotline, 1-800-656-HOPE. So if you're out there struggling and you need resources, you can contact Jerry. I'm sure she would love to talk to you, or check out RAINN.org.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, people can come to my website, jurilove.com, JURILOVE.com, or my Instagram is at JuriPanda, JURIPANDA. So you can message me if you have any questions about nonprofit or just life in general, or about how I overcame my adversity.
Hey, thanks so much for being a guest on my show today, Jerry, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me, Travis.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.